Yeah, this is Ted Dabney, the forgotten man of Atari.
Welcome to Roundup 99, which is a one-off special interview that we're doing with Eli from Pico Interactive. Also, as usual, we've got myself, UK Mike, we've got Scott, and we've got Sparklepuss joining us as well for his input. Eli, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us about who you are and what you do.
Hey, what's up, guys? Well, again, my name is Eli, and I run Pico Interactive, which we are a game developer and publisher, I guess, that concentrates in classic video games. And that's it.
Well, you say that's it. I'm sure we'll hear there's much more to the story. So,
can you talk about maybe your most popular products that you have?
Well, we used to own the license of Super Noah's Ark. And a lot of people don't know this yet, but we bought out Wisdom Tree recently. So we own that company or, well, brand and all the properties. So that's the most popular game, I'd say, Super Noah's Ark, because everybody knows it because the Angry Video Game Nerd made a segment about it. So that's a Super Nintendo game, the only unlicensed Super Nintendo game during the Super Nintendo lifetime. And then we've done a few projects like reprinting cartridges and then remaking it like sort of like HD for PC. It's currently available on Steam right now.
And so do you develop your own sort of homebrew games for various platforms? What platforms do you put games out on?
We do a combination of development and then acquisition. So we've acquired a lot of unreleased games. And to, you know, games that were canceled back in the day for whatever reason or that were unfinished, we've acquired a bunch of those and basically getting the rights. If they need to be finished up, finish them up and then release them in their original format that would have been, you know, Genesis or Super Nintendo, NES or something like that. And so, like we also do development, although we haven't put out a really big project yet, but, you know, We'll do that soon.
Eli, and are you sort of the big think tank guy? Are you the marketing guy? Do you actually get your hands dirty? Can you program? Can you tell us a little bit about your skill set?
I do not program, and I do not do pixel art, but I like to think of myself. You know, have you ever played that, you know, the game? I'm like the wild card.
Yeah.
That you could use for every color. I mean, I do from cleaning up the shop to assemble PCBs to discussing licensing and business relationships with IP owners to packaging to, you know, whatever, shipping and marketing, web design, everything that does not involve game programming and then the art, the sprite arts, the pixel art.
I bet you open up the shop in the morning too, don't you?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, cool. Sure. I mean, do you want to talk about your early days with Mike Kennedy and how you got involved in the whole Mike Kennedy empire?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember directly when that was, but it had to do with the Retro Magazine and me. I think the very first time was that, you know, I was interested in making guides, like an actual guide to be printed on the magazine, and then in more, because I don't know why, you know, a weird idea that I had. And then it had to be then about Mike Kennedy contacting us to get our games sold on GameGabble, and he like gave us like a free account, but I never got to upload anything, you know. Don't want to be rude or anything, but it wasn't really worth it. I mean, there was like no traffic and stuff like that. So, and then he morphed into get it being advertising, wanting to advertise in the retro magazine, and then yada yada yada, Retro VGS, Coleco Chameleon, and all that.
Okay, so did you end up advertising in his magazine?
No, I had agreed, I remember, to advertise like a small, the smallest like quarter of a page, and but then like something came up like an hour after I had agreed, and I didn't sign any contract. I was like, Mike, you know what? This came up. I'm not gonna be able to pay it, but I'll contact you later whenever, you know, we can advertise, and you know, that was it. But we never advertised at all there. I've tried Retro Gamer, but never the retro one.
Funnily enough, Scott, we got quarter of a page, didn't we?
Yes, we did. So now you already had a couple of, you know, little dealings there. At what point were you approached about making games for this console? You know, if you can tell us approximately when and kind of how that went down.
It was like mid, if I remember correctly, it was like 2014 when I first heard about a new console, you know, that Mike was trying to get together, to put together. And I remember, like, he was like, you have any popular games or whatnot? I was like, well, we're working on getting the rights of Steam Power. It was like back, like early 2014. So, and he didn't know what Jim Power was. I mean, that game is not very popular here in the U.S., but it was pretty popular in Europe. I mean, and Glory CL, French developer, put it out for, like, Amiga and all that. And we were getting the rights then, and I, you know, was like, well, we got this, and we got other Super Nintendo games. And I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, we'll still iron out the details for this. I got the molds for the Jaguar and all that. And I was like, okay, well, just let me know, you know. We'll have all these games, we'll be interested in, you know, if you have something, console, we'll put them there. And that was pretty much how it started. It was like early 2014.
And so how do you go about doing anything with that? You know, what platform are you developing for? You know, what's it going to run? What was kind of going on at that stage? And this,
yeah,
I assume,
what
was the Retro VGS, was it?
No, he didn't, like, it was like, we don't... I mean, I asked, like, well, what's it going to be like? Is it going to be... Because he told me it was a new retro console, like cartridge space. I was like, okay, that's my thing, cartridges. So I asked him, like, what is it? And he told me, yeah, I don't have, you know, the details right now, but I'll contact you later. Please don't mention anything, and yada, yada. So, I mean, if it didn't have any details at all, what's it going to be running on? Then, until I heard, I'm trying to think, but I remember when I was part of Nintendo, you know, I was in Nintendo Edge forum, he posted there, and it, then, you know, it was like 6 months after or so, when we initially talked about the console, is when he started talking about getting homebrews, like NES homebrews and Super Nintendo homebrews, and port them to this new console. And but I still didn't really knew or he didn't say what kind of, you know, platform was it going to be. I mean, what is it going to be running on, what processor, or what language, or, you know, anything. So that was the, you know, the first year of like 2014 when I heard about the console. So it was basically nothing. I mean, we didn't know what it was going to be running on.
Now, at what point to sort of fast forward, when the system transitioned from being owned by GameGabble / Retro to being owned by the second company that attempted the Indiegogo, and then the third company that licensed it with Coleco,
uh-huh.
At what point were you pulled, after it was, you know, the whole failed RetroVGS Indiegogo, it was reborn as the Coleco Chameleon. Were you basically just continuously involved through that process, or what, like a new set of negotiations opened up with the new company? Did you know about all these different companies Or were you always kind of just talking to one guy?
No, I always talked to Mike. I didn't know there was different companies. I remember the first Indiegogo, Mike approached us. They were like, oh, well, we're ready. You know, we're going to launch a Kickstarter then. You know, we want to put games. And we had just recently released Super Noah's Ark on PC, the one that I mentioned. So it was pretty popular, like, well, quote-unquote popular. I mean, it was causing buzz, and Mike was like, well, what games do you want to, you know, what do you have? And I sent him a file with all the titles that we own or have license for, and was like, you know, pick your game or pick your games, whatever you want. And there was games like Jim Power, Dorkin' In, which is this great Super Nintendo that we've, like, my most proud work that I've been involved in. And he picked Super Noah's Ark, and I thought, I guess, like, oh my, he just wants, because it's popular, the Angry Video Game Nerd talked about it, and I mean, and then it just, like, whenever he posted on Facebook, it just backlashed real bad. Like, people were like, what, this game is no, whatever. So then, that's the first time that I knew the whole Retro VGS as a company, which was Mike Kennedy, Jerome Carlson, and Steve Wojda. I didn't know about any other companies before that or any other people involved.
Or did you know about it after that? Did you know that the company, after the Indiegogo, that company was dissolved and another company was created that did the contract with ColecoVision? Were you aware that it was a whole another company again?
No, I didn't know that, man. Clever.
So did you only deal with Mike, or did you get to speak to Steve or John about, you know, anything hardware related? Was there any talk of what the system was going to be at this time?
No, I knew then on the Indiegogo, before the Indiegogo, that the console was just going to be, supposedly it was going to be FGPA, and then basically what they were going to do is acquire homebrews or Super Nintendo games, Genesis games, NES games, and then have them, you know, burn into a cartridge. I mean, this is what I understood, right?
Yeah.
A cartridge that had a different pinout and probably different schematics of the original platform, SNES, Genesis, or NES, or whatever. And then it will be make it compatible with the console using the FGPA cores. And
so
I thought it was
clever,
so I was like, huh, they really want to make a monopoly, and so people don't make their own cartridges to sell on that console if it's successful, because, you know, they are the ones that have this new cartridge, and the console has a different pinout.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, it's sort of like a Retron 5, but in a FGPA. So, I knew them, but I never spoke, like, I spoke with Steve Wojda after the Indiegogo about the unreleased game he made, the Police Academy. That's the only exchange of information I've had with Steve. And I never spoke with John Carlson at all during that time.
So I'm guessing this is around the time that they were still thinking they were going to have the calls from Kevtris, and so you could program for whatever platform and they would take care of it.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. Although, I mean, I thought that was his plan even without Kevtris, you know, because the whole thing with the... And you know what? I just remember right now, I met Mike for like 15, 20 minutes at E3 that year, you know, was last year. And, you know, then he told me, oh, well, you know, we're working, and he gave me a bunch of resumes of people, and I don't know if it was just Steve and Carlson. And then he told me, like, oh, but the price is going to be $300. I was like, what? Like, like, you know, they're not going to, people are not going to pay that. You're going to sell, like, a few consoles, but that's not happening. I mean, it was like, oh, well, it's your project. I mean, you can charge $1,000 if you like, but I'm just telling you. And I remember it. I mean, that's something that I just remember right now. But again, I never spoke with anybody about hardware. I just knew that we were going to submit the game ROM, finished ROM, and they were going to make cards and they were going to sell.
Eli, have you been involved with any other, you know, sort of homebrew systems, something similar to the Retro VGS, or anybody else asking you to port?
Well, not directly, like, homebrew systems. We were going to last year, and we've done it since 2013, 2014. With Hyperkin, I mean, it's not really a new system. They do just clone consoles. And for example, last year we were going to be a packing game for their, it was going to be a Retron 5. And after, you know, they confirm in writing, you know, we're going to get so many units of this game that, you know, that they asked me to not develop, but put together, you know, it had some development work. They flaked on us. So that's the only other, sort of like similar packing game type of deal that we had, but also, you know, didn't happen.
Okay, now let me ask you a question. As we're leading up to this toy fair, it's been suggested in several forums that there is some sort of secret collusion, that you just happen to be there and just happen to have a cartridge in your pocket and just happen to hand it over to Mike. Could you tell us the story of how it was that you ended up at the toy fair and interaction there was?
I even announced, like, in forums and Twitter and Facebook, I'm going to the toy fair specifically to check out the Coleco Chameleon. What do you guys want me to, you know, look for? And some people were like,
in the jag.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, I would have if they would have told me or somebody would have thought of that. But they, you know, some people just start playing around, like, well, ask them how they're going to pay the bills or, you know, stuff like that. But I went there and I spent, you know, and this is, I always think like this when I make business, quote unquote, decisions. I was like, okay, so this could happen. I think a project like this will be cool and it will be good for us because, you know, we do homebrew for a living and you don't sell a lot of cartridges. Like sometimes, the best selling cartridges do 300 copies. So, you know, if somebody comes and tells you, well, we're going to do this and we're going to have, you know, 1,000 units, 2,000 units sold, even if you're going to get just a cut of it, it's better than just selling 200, 300 copies. So I was like, okay, so I'm going to invest on this with my time and my fund, I put aside a fund to go to gaming conventions each year. Last year, I blew it on E3 to go and talk about this whole packing game with Hyperkin. Didn't happen. Lost that investment. Anyways. And this year I was like, okay, well, it's early in the year, but I'm going to spend it all. I'm going to go to the toy fair. I'm going to check it out. I'm going to see, you know, hopefully, you know, try to build a relation, a business relationship there in a way that they get our games and sort of like sell copies. But also I'm going to check out because they already have liked on me, my hat on the Indiegogo because, to make a parenthesis, on the Indiegogo, he announced Super Noah's Ark as a launch title, and then he just didn't add it on the Indiegogo. So I was like live on Target. Then I was like, okay, I guess I'm not in the Indiegogo. That's fine. And then
yeah, it's funny how you find out you are or aren't involved with an ongoing project, isn't it?
Yeah, and then it was so funny because, you know, people were telling me, well, you dodged the bullet, and I was like, okay, I guess. I mean, if you say so. And then the next day, shit hit the fan, Indiegogo, Mike comes and tells me, dude, I'm going to add your game tomorrow. I'm like, nah, we're going to hold off, man. Thank you. And, you know, good luck. And that's how I sort of, like, ended that Indiegogo deal.
Just before we carry on, Eli, are you banging on the desk or anything? I know you might be getting angry and animated, but we can hear some.
I'm moving my hands, and I sometimes hit the desk, but I'm not banging.
Yeah. So this, I guess one of the questions a lot of people had about the toy fair, you've kind of answered why you were there, and, you know, it stands to reason you want to build business relations. How come you just conveniently happened to have a SNES cartridge with you at the toy fair?
So I took... Two games. One is NES, the multi-card that I had done for Hyperkin, and one NES games. And the reason I did was because I knew Nerdlock was going to be there. And I had been talking, you know, to them to try to get our games on their subscription box, right? So I was like, okay, and then like something happened where they asked me to send a sample and I forgot, and I was like, oh, and he told me the guy, I think his name was Ron. He was like, whoa, we'll be at Toy Fair. Okay, I'll take it. I'll give you the sample then. So I took two. It was a SNES multi-card, and then which was the prototype that we made for Hyperkin,
mm-hmm.
and then it was an NES game. It was just a standalone NES game called Quest Force. So I go there, and then when I read through the, you know, when I'm in New York already, we got there a few days before just to get to know the city. I read that Loot Crate was going to be there. I'm like, great, I brought two cards, one for Nerlog, one for Loot Crate. Hopefully something sticks, right?
Yeah.
And we'll move some cartridges, you know, to the subscription box places. Anyways, so I get there, you know, Saturday comes in. We get there, my wife and I, and we were like, let's go, you know. And another reason I went there, I mean, the main reason was the Coleco Chameleon, but I'm a big action figure collector, and I like to trade action figures with, you know, with other sort of like communities and friends. So like, oh, maybe I could just buy Liquidation action figures and then trade them with my friends for the ones that I want.
Yeah.
So we got there and we started looking around the booths, and my wife was like, I don't know if it's just my wife, but she wanted to go like to every single booth in the like from the very first corner. And then see everything, try whatever puzzle they were doing or whatever toy, get their flyer, hear the information. So I was like, oh my God, well, like,
hey, you're lucky she didn't want to go handbag shopping.
So anyways, we're walking, and we were like we passed like an hour, and we were barely on the third aisle or the first floor, and then on the first room. So if there was two rooms in the first floor and then one big second floor. So like, you know what, I'm going to go check out the Chameleon, you know, wait for me, go get something to eat or whatever, or to drink, I'll be back, and then we'll finish up this floor. And then that's when I went up there, I was like, hey, what's up, Mike? And then I met Stephen from ColecoAddict.com, and then I met some other people that were introduced from their Mike's team, but I didn't really pay much attention. And then I met Chris Cordillo there, and then, you know, I saw that the console was there, and then they had that big cartridge in there, and Mike tells me, you know what, and went back a little bit. While I was on the ride to the Toy Fair, my phone was going crazy, you know, because we were a little late. We got there like at 11:30. So since, you know, 11 or so, my phone was going crazy with Facebook messages, but I didn't pay attention to them. On my way from leaving my wife in the first floor to go into the Chameleon, I read messages from the guy Shiro, the guy that develops for us, and Carl Williams, Prevers. And they're like, oh, they're saying it's Super Nintendo Mini. I was like, what? Like, I was like, oh, that's funny. Yeah, they think it's a Super Nintendo Mini. And I get there, and the first thing that Mike tell me, you know, after meeting with all these people, well, they're saying that this is Super Nintendo, but it's just a connector. Like, oh, I guess you only use the cable, right? That's fine. Anyways, he then proceeds to tell me, I tell him, let me play. I want to really, you know, showcase Broken In, because it's a very hard game, and I know it, you know, I tested it, and I finished it, like, so many times, you know, it's going to look good when I play it. He's like, well, the cartridge, it's not working. It's resetting randomly. I'm like, all
okay,
right.
Now, Ely, let me just jump in here with a, you know, remember what you were going to say. And let me jump in here with a little side discussion that this is the perfect time to bring it up, okay?
Okay.
Now, we have identified, and when I say we, everybody, has identified that prototype cartridge to be the front half of a Jag shell electrical tape to a SD to SNES multicart. Now, I actually am holding one in my hand here. Stone Age Gamer on Atari Age confirmed that he did, in fact, ship one to us for review. Okay. And we did review this cartridge on our show. Mike Kennedy is clearly aware this cartridge exists. If you go back, I can't remember exactly which roundup it is, but you go back in our show history, you will find a review of this SD to SNES multicart, right?
Yeah.
He knows it exists. He knows it. Now, there's a couple things I want to bring up about the cartridge. It was reported by you and others that, the console appeared to be unstable, it was random when you were setting, having issues. Now, we know why that is. Now, Stone Age Gamer confirmed it, I confirmed it. In fact, if you go back and listen to the discussion I did about using it in the Hyperkin Portable, that this cartridge has a processor, an FPGA, and several other integrated circuits. It draws significantly more power than your average Super Nintendo cartridge. That's why if you try and use this SD to SNES in the Hyperkin Mobile, it will usually not play and randomly reset. Okay. The power supply that they were confirmed to be using is a 3-in-1 power supply. It's used from different systems. It's a marginal capacity power supply that's not as robust as the original one. It cannot supply sufficient power for this cartridge, you know. So are you familiar with all those issues?
No, I'm not familiar. Okay. I mentioned on Atari Edge, I never had seen or touch or ever, you know, play with an SD to the SNES. I used the Super UFO, which is like a way cheaper flash card. So I wasn't, like, when I got there, I wasn't familiar of how it looked. The PCB, although I could add, I mean, if I would have seen it just, like, without the front case, I would have identified as an NES game, like, right off the bat. But they had it plugged it in. And then I never seen just the operating, not the operating system, the menu that comes up. But, you know, I'll address that in a little bit.
Okay. Did he claim that this was a custom piece of hardware developed by his hardware guy?
I asked him, you know, he tells me, well, Nick, check it. Check out the cartridge. It has an SD and all, SD card and all. I was like, oh, cool. I mean, you guys made it? Who made the menu? It looks okay. That's why I asked. And he's like, I think Lee did. He built it. I was like, oh, okay. I took his word. And then that's the first time I heard the so-called Lee.
So just to be clear, he said that Lee created the cartridge that was inside that console.
Yes.
And this is his latest hardware engineer, we believe, his latest hardware engineer.
Number five.
Yeah, people have identified him as somebody called Marshall Lee.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And know his full name?
Yeah, I think that's in the Atari Age thread, or I've seen it somewhere that somebody thinks it's this guy called Marshall Lee.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a couple names thrown around, but we don't know.
No.
I've only talked to him. Yeah, I talked to him after that Toy Fair. I talked to him a bunch of times, even at that Toy Fair. And I've only, you know, one thing that I could say that really gave me a weird feeling was that he always called me from an unknown number, you know, no caller ID, and then he was just Lee. But I'll get to that later. I mean, that's the good stuff.
Okay, we'll let you get to it. Don't worry.
Going back, do you have any other question or like should I?
Well, so about this SD NES, right?
Okay.
So he claimed it was a custom piece of hardware developed for them. He knows what it is. We aired it on our show. It's a well-known thing with us. Was there anyone standing around him when he made this claim that heard that? Like, basically, what I'm getting at is this. Was it just him or were other people on his team there and heard him say this and made no attempt to correct it?
The only person that I saw that was next to him, because he was behind getting something off the back of the booth then, and it was his wife.
Okay, that's fine. Now, one other technical question I've got for you. Okay. So we all know what happened, that you pull out your game, plugged it in, and it worked much better than the resetting most cards. Now, little background here. I'm an engineer, and I want to just vouch that is entirely accurate, because we know that power supply has insufficient capacity to correctly run the SD to NES card. And your game is just, you know, it's a simple, standard SNES game, draws less power. That's why the thing suddenly started working. We understand that's exactly why.
And just for the record, before you continue, your review of that was in Roundup 52. If you use the search on our website, search for Superboy, Hyperkin, Superboy, Stone Age Gamer, you'll find Roundup 52 where you do the review on it. And you mentioned, excuse me, you mentioned those power issues.
Okay, yeah. So now that's one technical aspect to this. Another technical aspect that I want to see if, you know, you have any insight on this. You know, often games have artifacts or features that do or don't appear on different systems. I'll give you a real quick example of this. The Atari Flashback 2 has basically all of the integrated circuits on the original Atari 2600 on one die, okay? When it was being manufactured, there are some errors on those integrated circuits that the engineer that was putting the chip together spotted and fixed, right? So basically he fixed hardware mistakes in 2600. Some of the games stopped working or wouldn't run right because those hardware errors have been fixed. So Kurt had to, you know, get back to them and say, hey, put the errors back in. It's important because otherwise it doesn't work right. So what I'm getting at is this. If you have an FPGA implementation of, say, a SNES or Nintendo or whatever, versus the actual hardware, versus, like, say, the Nintendo on a chip, you know, there's going to be different behaviors in the game. Yeah. Did you – I don't know if this game does or doesn't, but does this game have any identifying features that would have told you what kind of hardware that it's running on?
I've tested this PCB on an original Super Nintendo and then an SNES Mini and then a Retro 3. And they work similar, although I can recall my SNES Mini will have a little bit of a glitchy font on the whenever you pick Legend, whenever you see the copyright notice with Pico Interactive, you will see a glitchy font. But, you know, not to keep your hopes high, I think that's my SNES Mini is just dirty or old.
Sure, I mean, I can have two Atari 2600 side by side, and you're going to get different, because of the, you know, the RF modulator, you're going to get different, you know, amounts of wave or not wave or whatever. But I was speaking like, is there, like, say, a green dot in the bottom corner or, you know, a missing menu item or something, like, confirmable?
Yeah, I know. Everything ran the same. I mean,
okay.
I never found anything like that.
Yeah, it's just a question that came up. So, we wanted to clarify whether it is or isn't. No, you know, agenda either way. Just, you know, very curious piece of, you know, information there. So, okay. But so go on with, you know, where you're at. I just really wanted to kind of jump on that.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I was at when he told me about the card, right? Well, I don't remember how this came up. I mean, there were other people, and I was talking to Steven, and I tried to speak with Cordillo about their ad games, plug and play. But somehow Mike tells me, hey, like, can you say something online about the whole SNES Mini? I was like, well, can I see the inside? And he's like, well, we don't want to really mess with it. I was like, okay, let me talk to your engineer. Let me talk to him over the phone. Let him tell me what he did. And then from there, you know, I could say that I talked to him and he told me this and that. You know, if you want me to say, and this is just me thinking, then if you want me to say that if there's not an SNES Mini, you gotta show me the inside. I mean, anyways, he calls him and we talk and we're like, okay, they're saying this, tell me what you did. And he's like, oh no, well, you know, we were delayed and we needed to get this done for the toy fair. So what I used, I had a scrap Super Nintendo Mini, you know, in the office and we used it back for the connectors, the AV out and the AC adapter, and I used the pin, and that's it. The inside is just a board, the cables are wired in, the controls are wired in, and it's just the pin connector, the cartridge connector, and the back. Now, I'm not an engineer or anything like that, so I didn't know then that it would have been more difficult to get AV out on an FPGA system than just HDMI up, right? Because I've read that on Atari.
It depends on the. That's one thing that I did a whole discussion on our show. It depends totally on the FPGA. Something like the MCC216, which is an FPGA based console, literally came in two different versions: VGA or NCSC composite out. It totally depends on which, you know, FPGA it is. That could be true. It might not be true. It totally depends on which FPGA it is.
Okay. Well, I mean, I didn't know. If I would have read this Atari Edge information before, I would have been a little bit more suspicious. And I was like, okay, I'll trust you. And I told him, would you be comfortable if I could see the inside? You know, let me show it. We'll just pick it up. I want to see the inside. And I could say, you know, you'll get rid of all these rumors, and I'll say it, third party, it's not an SNES Mini. I have one, and when I test the games on an SNES Mini, and I don't have the top part, so I see every day the board and the, you know, schematics or how the chips are, you know, aligned and whatever. So he was like, no, I wouldn't feel comfortable, you know, it would just take together, it's too delicate, I don't want you to, you know, I don't want it to be broken the first day. I can't fix it over the phone, or I can't fix it from over here. I don't know which race he used. I'm like, okay, that's fine. No, I'm just gonna say that. You know, I talked to you, and you told me this, and then I can't really confirm it is not an SNES Mini. I just
at that point, you know, I mentioned this in another discussion. I said, I understand why in the position that you were in, you didn't, you know, run out of the room screaming, holy shit, it's a SNES and a JAG.
Yeah.
Did you want to run out of the room screaming, holy shit, it's a SNES and a JAG?
Well, I don't know if you ever, I mean, it's a weird feeling whenever you see something. When I saw also, and this is when I plug in the card, when I plug in my card, because, right, I was examining, I was looking, just, you know, how the thing was failing, the setting, and I thought, you know what, and I I think he unplugged it. I don't know how I saw the pins. Oh, you know, I already knew that the pins were Super Nintendo because Lee had told me, and I thought, you know what, let me try my PCB, if it's a UPA, and if it's the same pin out, because they use the scrap parts, it should work. Now, I thought, then, all the way before that, I was skeptic about them having an FPGA. I always thought, you know, they're going to have an emulator. So That was to happen. I'm going to plug this. The menu is going to run. I'm going to pick a game. It's not going to map. That PCB has a weird mapper. And map the menu. And emulators usually don't do it. You have to hardwire how the mapper works to the emulator. I was like, it's not going to map. And I told Mike, plug this in, it should work. And we're like, well, your PCB has different pins. Ours have two pins on the side. So we're like, that's just how Super Nintendo is. You have the Super Nintendo pins. This one should work. He plugged it in, and they lift the cube. And I'm doing all the signals right now, but in here. But they lift the cube, and then somebody hold the controllers up, so, you know, they wouldn't be pulling that. And then Mike put his hand in there and then plug it in, and then they turned it on and didn't work. I was like, I saw how you plugged it in, man. It wasn't, like, you just put it in pretty loose.
Just the tip.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, plug it in right, take it off, plug it in right, and then, you know, set the cube down, and then turn it on. They turn it on, it started. And I was like, okay. And I picked the first game. I was like, it's not going to map. It's going to give me a black screen. It's going to reset. That's what it does whenever you don't have the map. And it worked. I was like, and I made like a surprise face. But at the same time, and this is what I wanted to get to, you know how it's hard to explain that feeling when either they give you like a very bad news, or you see like something in the scary movie that really scares you.
Yeah.
That doesn't jump on you, like just something really scary, like that feeling on your back or whatever. That's what I felt there. I was like, crap, okay. You know, okay, well, they might have either an FPGA then. You know.
Did you get that feeling like when someone shows you their Lamborghini and you realize it's a kit car and you know it's a Fiero under there?
Well, no, it's a I don't know, like you feel something drop on you or something like that. It's when you're scared or something. It's hard to explain. You know, I'm trying to think of a really, you know, particular situation that will give this feeling. But But that deal, that's what I felt. I was like, okay, well, it's either a Super Nintendo Mini or it's an FPGA. It can't be just the emulator. And that's why I posted online, and, you know, that was my statement. You know, I could not confirm it was an SNES Mini, and then that thing worked. You know, that's what I saw. And I asked them to show me the PCB, the board, and I, you know, they didn't allow me. So, you know, that's what I saw. I'm going to remain neutral. I'm not going to be, you know, speculating or anything or how do you call it? Just, you know, claiming stuff that I didn't see. Even if it smells like a duck and it walks like a duck, it sounds like a duck, I'm just going to say, I give the benefit of the doubt and say, you know, it might be a chicken. Yeah. You never know. So
it was either a SNES or the fastest developed SNES core in the world.
Yeah.
that still had to use the back ass end of a mini SNES.
Yeah.
And I'll give my statement, you know, what I think of that now, later on the story, you know, after all the lies that, you know, I discovered in a funny way. But, well, I'll give my statement now.
Just before you do, just because one of the things that's come out of this is, and I was kind of mixed on this at the beginning, but as the story's developed, I've kind of made my mind up. Now, Scott and I know Mike pretty well. We've talked quite a bit of technical stuff on the podcast over the last 6 or 7 years with him. And you can tell Mike technical stuff, and he'll take your word for it, because he doesn't know and understand it. Now, yeah. If he's got an engineer saying, no, this is a board I've made, I've put the back of a SNES on, I've hardwired the controllers, I can completely see Mike taking that at face value and believing it. Now, yeah. If I can also see Mike, with the situation as it's evolved, just barefaced lying to everyone that it's, you know, their own board. What are your feelings on that? You were stood there looking at his face, you were stood in front of him as he's telling you it's their board. What are your thoughts on that?
I told them, I missed this in the story. So after I was looking on the menu before I changed the board, I see on the top part, on the right, Ikari or something like that. And I remember that name, it's a username for a forum. I was like, oh shit, this is SNES. It's actually because Shiro, my developer, told me that they're using an SD2 SNES card. I was like, oh shit, this is it. It is. So that's how I realized, and I told him, and you know, after I spoke with the lead guy, and he told me use the pins, I told him, you know, my board's gonna work, try it, because I saw, you know, that and I mentioned
IKARI. I'm looking at it right now with my card here in my hand.
Yeah,
that, and I've heard that username before. I don't know if it was Digital Press or something. I know that's a guy that does some sort of homebrew or. I don't remember if reproductions, I've heard it, and that's how I recognize it. And I mentioned in the Atari Age threads that, you know, I saw like a copyright thing, like a copyright notice, but it wasn't, you know, I didn't know if it was a copyright or whatever, but I saw that Ikari, and that's how I realized, oh yeah, this is, it is an SD to DS, whatever, how do you call it?
SD to SNES.
Okay, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and that's how everything, you know, happened. And then I explained to him, okay, dude, this is not your board. This is an SD. You buy this, like, online. And they were like, no, he made it. I saw his face. And then when I explained, no, this is a flash card. You put ROMs on it, and it plays on your Super Nintendo. And the face that he gave me, like, okay, I was like, no, this guy's not getting it. So, you know, I was like, don't worry about it. Put my board in. You know, move on. And yeah, that when I saw that face, it just like, oh, okay. And you know, I tried to be polite on my first vlog, and that's why I said Mike has put 110% of his trust into his engineer.
Mm-hmm.
I was not mean, not saying nicely. You know, Mike does not understand or is clueless about hardware. I'm not even a hardware guy, but at least I can sort of like, you know, defend myself and try to understand a little bit of things, but, you know, Mike is not, you know, he was clueless at the time. I mean, I didn't know if you had reviewed that thing before.
Well, no, I reviewed it, but he was aware of it. We talked about it on the show.
Yeah. So maybe at that point in time at the show when you all stood there with him, maybe he was unaware that it was a SNES, but he's certainly aware now.
Yeah. No, and now, you know, I could change my, you know, I said, like, I could not confirm. Right now, I'm 100% sure there was an SNES Mini in there.
Yeah.
And you know, I stayed on the fence all this, you know, until the Kickstarter and whatever, and then until, what was it, like 2 or 3 days ago, I still, you know, gave them the benefit of the doubt on that one, and right now, you know, as of yesterday, or two, like I said, 2 or 3 days ago, I'm 100% sure that was an SNES Mini.
As is most of the rest of the world.
Now, did you see the pictures of the replica I built?
Yeah, I saw it. And when I saw it, I was like, oh, I had the same feeling when that thing worked. Like, I was like, oh my God, it looks exactly 101. You know, even like the lineup for, and it makes sense, they use black tape just to hide the little gap from the back to the back of the shower. So I did saw those.
Is there anything else you could say about the actual case and the controllers, just a little bit beyond?
Well, I just, you know, recall about the controllers. I didn't really think, you know, it had, you know, when they said, oh, well, we're using a Super Nintendo controller because the other one is not mapped correctly. I was like, oh, okay. But my mind, you know, I thought they're using a Super Nintendo controller, the one that has a USB out, because I don't know why, you know, I thought they must have had the USB already on the console. I mean, that was just my train of thought. And then when I get there, I see the extension going into the console, plugged inside. You know, you couldn't see any cables. It was just the cable of an extension going inside. And I remember I tried to play Jim Power when, you know, that thing was failing or whatever, and I step on the connection of the actual game cartridge. The connection of the game controller to the extension, and I saw it was, weird. They used, like, an original Super Nintendo, you know, connector, not really a USB. But I didn't think, I, at the time, I didn't think of anything until, you know, people started bringing up more stuff about the SNES Mini, and I honestly thought, you know, okay, they had the Super Nintendo connection going into extension, and then the extension going into the console, and then wired it into the PCB, you know. But
you know what's absolutely incredible about all of this? The whole Toy Store. Every time I go to say Toy Fair, I always say Toy Store. What I find so fascinating about this story is that they managed to get there with a multi-cart, the SDS to NES. And they actually, it was obvious to me they didn't test it, right? Because if had they ever tested it, they would have seen immediately with that power supply that it reset. So obviously this thing was a last second untested thing. The guts were thrown into the JAG shell. It was, you know, the multi-cart had the games on the SD card, jetted out the door. And I mean, it was a last second thing. There's no way they tested it otherwise. Probably the first time that combo was ever tested was there on the floor when, it kept resetting. And that they couldn't figure that out, you know, is extraordinary, you know. And even then, just the idea that, you know, well, quick, send someone down to the nearest, you know, thrift shop or game store to get a SNES card of any kind. That just, it's amazing.
Yeah, they could have done that because I know there was one, like, a mile or so from the Toy Fair. I mean, but I guess I you could say that Mike didn't know that there was an SNES meeting there, but or that the pins were the same. But I mean, he could have done that. He could have just gone and bought a Super Nintendo game off a thrift store.
Wow. So you left. Yeah. You is there anything else about the Toy Fair that you want to cover before you go on to your the next part of the story you want to tell?
I remember, you know, whatever, like, we left there, we enjoyed our life. Oh, you know, we got invited by Mike, because he said that he was going to take everybody to dinner, so we went. And that's how I really got to talk a little bit more with Chris Cordillo, and we talked, you know, mainly about, like, action figures and whatever. And then I talked to more with Stephen from Coleco Addict. And, you know, he told me, like, how he started and you know, in the gaming, not industry. Well, yeah, in the gaming industry, he had, like, a forum and whatnot. And that was it. You know, we left, you know, and we enjoyed the last day on New York. The next day, you know, everybody was doing SNES Mini, and I was getting pressure. Like, you were there. You do SNES games. How could you not see that it's an SNES Mini? And, you know, I was still... I said it, you know, there, I'm going to make a statement, I'm going to blog post today or tonight or tomorrow, but I text Mike, I was like, Mike, you got to get rid of these rumors, just send me the pic or video of the inside of the console. And I'll
Which could have been done the moment the show ended.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this was Sunday, right? We were, I was on my flight, connection flight, when I sent this text, said, send me the picture right now. You're just going to lift up the top panel, the top case. Send me the pictures. I'll confirm it, and then the rumors will go up that way. And I got a response saying, like, we don't really want to risk it. We won't do it. We'll do it later. Or we'll show pictures of everything on the Kickstarter. Like, okay, we might. And then that's, you know, I was like, I started thinking, hey, how can I manage this so people don't think that I'm, you know, I know that it's SNES Mini. I'm gonna try to stay neutral. I'm gonna make a statement with what I saw and what I can confirm, and then hopefully, you know, I'm trusting Mike is gonna show the insights on the Kickstarter or during the week, and everything should go away.
Now, did he explain what the justification for why they didn't want to show it?
Okay, he told me that they were going to take the chance to open it at the fair. That it worked great that day, and then somebody played Legend from beginning to end. And then he told me that they were like less than 2 weeks from showing the final or the revised versions. And, you know, that everybody will know what they were exactly will be buying. I guess not.
Video camera part.
Yeah.
He told me, like, I'll send you some photos before everybody... Everybody knows, maybe by the weekend.
Did that happen?
No. It never happened. I never. I saw what everybody saw. It was pictures. You know, at the time that they saw. And you know what? Like I said, I'm not a hardware guy, so I saw him. I was like, oh, okay, they have the prototype. I mean, they posted the pic. And I did thought, like, what other people were saying, like, huh, this... pictures are like so really well, you know, played. Like, why the console is here and you can't see the cable? But I thought just a little bit of it. I'm like, okay, well, at least they have the you know, the pictures out with a new PCB. And then, you know, everybody discovered that was just a video card.
Yeah.
Somehow that played Super Nintendo games.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was it. But I mean, do you want to take a break or
no, keep going, man.
Okay, so I guess the next chapter of the saga is when you know, I arrived here and I started talking more to this Lee guy. Now, this really pissed me off. Because that, you know, he made me feel like he thought I was a stupid or, like, I don't know. He told me all this stuff, these days that we were talking, and we were talking mainly because he convinced Mike Lee that we should, because he saw the menu we did, you know, the menu, the multi-card we, you know, Mike kept on the toy fair. Because he asked me for it. Can I keep the board? I was like, yes, go ahead. And he, Lee, saw the menu. He was like, oh, it looked very well. You know, and he convinced Mike that we should do a menu with a Coleco branding and then get it with all the Super Nintendo games of the Coleco, Chameleon, launch titles, or whatever, and so they could have it for the video. Now, you know, it's not easy to, because a little bit of background of that menu or how that system works. We don't know how that mapper works other than that it maps the games. What we what we did back in 2013 to discover how to make multicards is that I traced back Chinese bootleggers, and I ordered a multicard from them, and then we dumped the ROM with the Super UFO and saw, you know, how they were, you know, how that ROM was put together, and then just had that ROM with our games and with our menu, and that's it. Like, we cannot really go and do this from scratch. We gotta do it from that original bootleg.
Yeah, repurposing that code to yeah, I got you.
So although I know that the No Cash SNES emulator has support for this, and that's how Hyperkin was able to add it to their Retron 5 emulator, the mapping. Anyways, I was like, okay, but it's going to take time. Well, we need it by this, by Monday or Tuesday. I was like, okay, we can do it. Although, you know, it's going to be he was like, how much are you going to charge? I was like, well, it's going to be cheap. I'm not going to keep any money. You know, you just pay my developer whatever he asked for. And, you know, I said, you know, $400. And I was like, okay, do it for $400. Put this games and City Hunter. Now, we've only done that menu with 4 megabytes total of games. So, you know, 4 1-megabyte games, or, you know, combinations of 4 megabytes or 32 MB. We had never done, you know, over that. So, Dorkin Inn by itself, for example, is 4 megabytes. So they wanted all the games. So, you know, we really ran into trouble. So all these days from the Toy Fair till the week of the Kickstarter, Lee was calling me every day, talking about stuff and the menu, and, you know, you guys are gonna finish it. We need it by Tuesday and whatnot. So all those calls, you know, turned into, you know, calls where we shared opinions of how the project was being managed, you know. And I said, you know, I said I spoke my mind about, you know, Mike really messed up on this one and on, and then He shared information, you know, because he told me, oh, you're on their NDA, I can share information from you. Now, before I get into that, all this was bullshit, right? All this were, like, complete lies, you know, everything. And I do remember he told me that he, whenever, you know, they made this company, because he said, I'm not just a guy, you know, I'm a company, I have an employer, I have a boss, you know, this company was doing, they were back, you know, delayed on the project, and Mike really wanted to go to the toy fair and show it, and then he told me, like, give me something, and they were like, okay, we'll make this, you know, we'll make this prototype, we're gonna use scrap parts.
Hey, Eli, can I just stop you right there? Can you just clarify, he has a company? I was a little confused, just want to make sure the listeners understand.
He told me, and he, you have no idea how many times, like, he tried to repeat it that he worked for a company, and every time, you know, he will mention an opinion or a thought, you know, he will make sure that I heard, oh, well, this is my opinion, personal opinion, not from the company that I work for. Now, he told me, like, so many times, he worked for a company, he had a boss, he had employees, he was on a payroll, this company was hired by Mike, right? As a contract. Now, where I was telling you before, oh, he told me, you know, and this is with the SNES Mini story, he told me, we did this with scrap parts, we used the back and the pins, and that's it, with our board, but we told Mike, and listen to this, do not show the back, do not show a picture of the back, because it's using scrap parts. And then he started complaining how Mike, the first thing that he did was take a picture of the back and then put it on Facebook. And, you know, he was like, all this have been, you know, avoided. Uh-huh, go ahead. Sparkle, you were going to say something?
No, he was just laughing.
Oh, okay. All this would have been avoided if Mike wouldn't have taken that picture that we told. And all this time, like I said, he made sure that I thought that he was part of a company, that we, you know, take a picture of the back. And he did it, and he did this to himself, you know, he's negligent, or not him, negligent. He just doesn't, he goes in a like a ramble and starts speaking, and he does stuff, he gets excited and whatnot. Now, again, we had all these different calls about, you know, whatever purpose, or just meh, like, oh, the menu, can you do it, or can you put the ROM for Sydney Hunter? Would you be okay with that? Because I know you guys are competitors with Collectivision. I was like, I don't mind. You know, and then the ROM wasn't working. It was just like not, the game was not playing. And, you know, all these different calls that we had throughout the week, he will make sure to speak with me on a, you know, on a personal opinion level about things, of different things, you know, about the project, or, and he will share stories about his employers, and, you know, oh, and, you know, this is where it really pissed me off, because everything was a lie, a big elaborate lie. You know, again, he told me that he worked for a company, you know, a big company. He had been with that company 50 years, right? He worked, he had two other employees, co-workers, working on this project for him, with him, called Eric and John, and the John was J-O-N, you know, and that he had a boss, and Mike had hired this firm to get this console done, and that they hadn't really ever done any really a console before, but you know, and he, and this is throughout different calls, he mentioned he had done work for Boeing that he could share, like he said something about a part for Boeing. He mentioned he had worked, they worked for aerospace, government, medical, military, you know, tech projects. And he mentioned about, and they did a LED flashlight that was like very tough, and you could just throw it away, like run over it with a car and nothing will happen to it and stuff like that. So all this, yeah, I don't know,
but you can't open the case because it might break the prototype.
Yeah.
So you, Eli, let me just see, make sure if I understand something. Is this menu, multi-cart menu that you were doing, is that the one pictured in the Facebook post that has Coleco Chameleon written sideways?
That's,
and then,
yeah.
So you did that?
Yeah, they asked me to get it done. I mean, I didn't do it directly. I told, you know, like I said, I told Mike and Lee, I'm not gonna charge you any money. You just gotta pay my developer.
I just wanted to make sure that is the same. What is displayed on that screen? Okay, so it is. And that is a SNES.
SNES. You know, you put that in a board and plug it in. It's gonna work on an original Super Nintendo.
Okay, so it's absolutely 100% your usual multi-cart boot menu. You know, 100%.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
And this, they asked us to do this for the Kickstarter video. That's the only reason they wanted that. That's why they wanted Sydney Hunter there, and they told me to put like most of our games. And like I said, we ran into problems where, you know, we were having bugs and games weren't really working because we were going over the amount of memory we have worked before. And anyways, like I said, all these calls, he told me all those lies, you know, because they're lies, and I'll get to that later. And he told me about like his company has insurance if something happens, and you know, I guess, like, one kid could eat a cartridge and they sue them. You know, he has an insurance that will take care of that. And then oh, my God, all the bullshit. He started telling me, we have a big campus here in the company that I work for. And every time I will try to get, you know, this company name, you know, it sounded like a cool company. You know, he will never disclose it because their contracts and the lawyers and then whatever, you know, would not allow me to disclose it, our company name. And I was like, well, you will really help Mike with all this SNES Mini and all these rumors and whatever if you come forward as a company, legit company, and say, you know, oh, we're working on this, which is, you know, this is, and then show the pictures of the video. Now, I asked him several times for pictures, and he will never do it. And
so wait, at this point, do you even have a number for this guy, or is it still, how are you contacting him if you have private?
Every time he will just call me from a unknown number, although I just
learned. From a payphone.
Yeah. I think he would just start 67 and then call me. So maybe I could go to my I use AT&T. I could go to the report, and I think I read online that even if they call you with an unknown number, you can go and see the phone number they call from on your report. So I could really, you know, have his phone number on there on the reports of, you know, like your monthly payment of monthly bill for your phone. So he always called me from an unknown number. And you know the excuse that it was that he had for that was, oh, this something's wrong with this T-Mobile number. I mean I gotta really call to T-Mobile. You know, I don't know why when I call somebody comes out as an unknown. So this guy, he really knows how to lie. You know, like a sociopath level,
serial
killer type of lie.
Sounds like the perfect developer.
Yeah. And you know, he told me that, like I said, a big campus, that they had showers there, because, oh, we have three, oh my gosh, we have three.
Why is he telling you about the showers?
Did he invite you over?
And I'll get to that.
A little saucy now.
He told me, I think it was like later in the night, you know, like around 7 p.m., he called me over that, the counselor, the menu, I don't even know. And then he...
Did he call you from the shop?
Yeah, well, no, not from the shower. You know.
Oh, fuck. I was spraying Cherry Coke over the console. I was taking a sip when you said that. Oh, God.
You like, we have like three different shifts in the morning, the afternoon, and then the evening, and we're putting extra hours to get this done for the Kickstarter. So, you know, I'm going to have to. I think he said like he was going to. I think that's why he mentioned showers. We're going to have a shower. I'm going to have a shower here. And then, you know, my wife is not happy, yada, yada. And then in another occasion, she told me, like, oh, no, we have a room full of arcades. And we have a cafeteria with, like, food that you can buy. And then another thing that he said, this, I mean.
So this is going to some length to build this whole lie.
Yeah. This guy, like, I don't even, like, maybe he hired somebody to, like, a scriptwriter. Or something.
but he needed you to build sort of like a ported recycled code menu system, and
yeah.
He has a campus that he's working out of.
The excuse was that it wasn't going to look pretty on the, and he gave me two sort of like things, although one wouldn't make sense if it was running through the GPA, and then, but it would if it was running like a game through the ARM, you know, like an emulator. So, he gave me the first cues was that, well, right now we just don't have anything to look pretty. We're just developers. We don't have a, like, we're not designers. So, you know, everything's command lines or whatever. And then, that was one. And then for the Kickstarter video, we don't want to be changing cards of the SNES game. So, it would be best if we just have a menu with all the games and we just go through them and show the gameplay. You know, without taking cards off. And I was like, okay, you know, okay, that's fine. And that's how, why, you know, that's the reason they give us why to, you know, we would do them.
And at this point, do you think all this sounds completely legitimate?
Well,
are you buying into it? Or are you like, oh, okay, like you're impressed, right? I mean, you have no reason to believe that this guy's just bold-faced lying.
Yeah, I didn't have any reason. And then there was one call that I was, like, really pissed off. I don't know why Mike did or what Mike wasn't doing. And I was like, oh, my God, they got to address this whole rumors. And it's getting – oh, yeah, I remember. Like, every day that I woke up, there was some bullshit out there in you know, online. And we were getting heat. And I was like, I'm pissed right now. Like, you got to address that. And I sent him an email because – then, you know, at the middle of the week or so, Mike gave him at retrovgs.com email address. So I said to him, you know, call me. And I told him, you know what, I'm done. Because at this time, you know, we had talked so many times and he has shared about his company. And I think they're an actual company, you know, legit with lawyers and accounting department and CEO and all that and a campus with showers and cafeteria. But, you know, these guys are legit. You know, if anything, I should be believing them, not Mike, you know. So I told him, you know what, I'm done. I'm going to, you know, we're out for this thing if they don't address. If they don't show pictures of the board playing or video, I really emphasize video because pictures, they can fake it. And they did.
Yeah, and they did.
three times.
And this guy was like, no. And it was a little bit odd how, like, he really tried me to calm me down and get me to, you know, rethink what I was wanting to do to get out of the project.
These are not the droids you're looking for.
Yeah. And then at some point, like, I got a little bit, not offended or insulted, but he was like, well, you're just a guy. Why do you say we as Pico? You're just a guy that you know, that works from home or whatever. And we're
and I've got a campus with showers.
They're like,
that's the new show title, Campus with Showers.
I have, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I tell them, well, at least I have contractors, man. They have been with me since day one, and, you know, we struggle, but we're here. And he's like, if you go out of this project, you know, you're gonna lose the opportunity to make the most money that you're ever gonna make in your life. And we're like, okay, what do you mean?
Now, Ely, do you want to leave this project, or do you want to take what's behind door number three?
Yeah, exactly. Well, tell me something to go. I told him, because I'm trusting this guy works for a company with lawyers and showers. And, tell me something, you know, to convince me that this project is not going to go down in flames. And if there's something, a prototype working, because I haven't seen anything, tell me something. And we're like, no, well, I know that there's some third-party checks ready to drop and get this finished. And this is when there's still a Kickstarter, right? You know, they're still planning a Kickstarter. And, we're going to make some work until the Kickstarter date, and that's when we finish. And then when the funds, and then, you know, we'll get to finish it up, but we'll have this done. And there's some, like, investor checks or whatever, or like, a big check coming in, and you're going to lose all this money, and then we already have the PCB and the prototype, and we're going to have it working. And so he gave me all this, you know, preach about, I should say. I was like, you know
now
what?
Who is he? This is Mike?
No, this is Lee.
Oh, Lee, okay.
Yeah. So I told him, you know what, Lee? Okay. Because I was, you know, pissed that Mike hadn't addressed any rumors, and he was silent.
Mm-hmm.
No pictures, no videos. It was as easy to send a video, and then people were like, oh, okay, they have heard that then. Okay, move on. And I told him, okay, you know what, Lee? I'm just going to stay in this project because of you. You're going to be responsible. I'm telling you, because you're LG, you work for a legit company. That's why I'm staying. That's why I'm believing that this is real. But it was. Anyway, you know, he was like, oh, well, I'm glad it's a good decision. You know what? And it was a little bit odd for me that he was invested, that, you know, I didn't leave the project. Because I don't want to be, you know, cocky or anything, but without our games, they didn't really have anything. We brought in 8 games or so. So, you know, they were just going to have Sydney Hunter, 1 game. So, you know, he was really invested, and it was like, I was a little bit, you know, confused. He was like, I thought you were just a contractor, a third-party company. Why are you, I mean, I guess you just don't want to lose the contract to follow after the Kickstarter, if it's fun. So I was like, okay. And, yeah, then we started, you know, he kept calling about the menu. We really crunched through it, and he was like, he was really pissed that we didn't get it on Tuesday, and, you know, the Tuesday, the week of the Kickstarter. And then we're trying our best, and then we finished it up. Well, finished it up, but it was buggy, and it didn't really work correctly, at least the game Dorkin' In, on Wednesday, and I sent it. Now, that day, that Wednesday before the Kickstarter was when, you know, he was really pressuring us, finish up the menu, finish it up. Why are, you know, you said that you were gonna do it on Tuesday. I'm just going to tell Mike right now that you are not going to be able to deliver. And I felt bad because I was like, oh, my God, he says this to Mike. Mike is not going to want to pay my developer, and he's been working all these days, you know, to get this menu done, and then I'm
for $100.
Yeah, you know, $400. It was $400, not $100. And you know, I'm going to have to pay him because I'm not going to just let him do work for free. So I'm going to be out of $400. I was already preparing myself to lose $400. That's fine. So, and I tell him, you know what? I have an idea. Let me send you. And this is, you know, we were talking about that, and then it hit me. Oh, my God. That PCB that Mike had worked on the you know, so-called prototype, because, you know, I still had the benefit of the doubt there that they had an FPGA prototype, because this PCB has a little macro chip that has the information on the macro and tells the console what to do. Now, on the video, they're going to do their own board, you know, their own cartridge board, and this board's not going to have the mapper. So they have to add support to the SGPA, you know, for the mapping information, because it's not going to work. So all this work that we're doing, we're wasting. So, you know, I sent him an email. Hey, you know what? You got to do this and that. He calls me. I was like, okay, you got to really fix this. You got to do support. And I was like, no, I think it will work. I was like, no, it's not going to work. Your board does not have the mapping information. And I told him, let me send you an old ROM of another multi-card that we've done that I have here in this computer, because I wasn't at the shop. I was at home. I get this ROM to work. If you get this ROM to work on the console with your board, your cartridge board, then the menu that we are finishing it up, it's going to work. But then it's not going to work, and then it's going to, imagine, you know, making the video for the Kickstarter and then none of the games play. So he starts working during we were on the call, and I don't know how he picked this. He tells me, okay, I send the email to that email address that Mike set up for him. And I tell him, he tells me, okay, I got the ROM. Let me burn it into the car. So it takes like 30 seconds. And then, okay, I'm going to plug it in, and I hear the menu music come up. I was like, okay, this is my mind thinking, okay, at least they got a prototype, you know, there in this company with showers and lawyers. and
unlisted numbers.
Yeah. And then I was like, I told him, it's not going to work. It's not going to map. And then he tried, oh, it's working. And I was like, try again. He tried one game, and it just, black screen, you know, no sound on my end. And then the menu restarted. I was like, I told you, you got to make this menu work on the console first, and then, you know, whenever we send this other menu, you can just burn it on the card, 30 seconds, and then have it ready for the video. I'm like, okay, how do I do support on this? Add support or, you know, make it work. I tell them, okay, go to this link. I give them the link of No Caches SNES documentation, and try to find the multi-part information. Read that, add that support, you know, whatever you have to do to make it work, that's the documentation. And then at this time, you know, Mike called me, and he tells me, Eli, Collector Vision just confirmed they're not going to be able to do the packing game. They had the packing game, Tiny Knife. They're not going to finish that. And so I sort of knew they have two other projects tied to crowdfunding, mm-hmm. you know, campaigns, Justice Bieber on Indiegogo and City Hunter on Kickstarter. They haven't finished or fulfilled any of those. It wouldn't look either good. It wouldn't look good. And it wouldn't be as smart to get a third game tied up crowdfunding, you know, and then not even being able to finish. Now, I'm just remembering something right now. That morning, I got finally, after months and months, contract from Mike. And I read it over. I told him, you know, you got to change this, this, and that. And then I noticed that it didn't have any clause saying that I could not sue another third party involved if they somehow are involved in, or they make this delay, this project delay, because we were, as a developer, we weren't going to get paid when the Kickstarter fulfilled. Mm-hmm. They were going to, I mean, the Kickstarter's finished or funded. We were going to get paid months after until they fulfill all the orders. So, you know, and this is just me, my thought of product.
So how are we going to create all this product to get in there? You're going to have to fund this? Or?
Yeah, our games are already done. They're Super Nintendo games, you know. So my benefit was that I didn't have to put any work up front. Because
but if he sells 10,000 units, then you're going to have to create more than, I would assume you don't have inventory of 10,000 units, right?
Okay, we were going to sell cards to them. They were going to license our games, you know, it was a license agreement. They were going to take our games.
So they would produce the cards.
Yeah, they were going to produce the cartridge, and then we will get a royalty per unit sold.
Okay.
That was the deal. So, and then I saw, you know, I thought, okay, let's say we don't get paid and our games are out there, and it's sort of like risky for us because they already have money and they could just not fulfill and they keep the money and then I'm, you know, people are going to come to me saying, hey, well, I bought, you know, Dirk and Imp and I didn't get it, give me one. So I make sure that I could read the contract and see that there was any clause saying that I could sue anybody if anything happened, and there wasn't.
This has a familiar ring to it, like the original Indiegogo. You know, $2 million, you're going to pay for offices, you're going to pay salaries, you're going to pay for this and that.
Showers, lawyers.
Yeah, and then there is going to be no risk to, you know, those directly involved. This is everyone else taking the risk.
Yeah, it was. And I thought, well, okay, well, in any case, and my only thought there was like, the only reason that this could be delayed, because they said that they have a prototype and it will take them 50 days to finish it up and then take it to production, was that the packing game is not ready because they, you know, they had in development. So I briefly mentioned on that call with the menu and whenever Lee was working, you know, burning the ROM, I mentioned like, well, I read the contract and this and that. I mean, I could really sue even ColecoVision, man. Because if they don't finish up the game by fulfillment, then the project is delayed and we don't get paid, and then that affects our profits or revenue, those operations in there. And I guess he told Mike or what, I don't know, something happened, and Mike calls me, you know, 30 minutes after I finish up talking with me and says, Eli, ColecoVision came in and he said, and they said that we cannot, they cannot, you know, finish off the game. The packing game. So I was wondering if you want to do a packing game. I'm like, sure. I mean, honestly, I really thought since day one, the only person that was going to make money as a developer was the packing game. Because we will have all these games, but what if nobody bought it?
Yeah.
You know, then we would have just been there. That's it. The only people that were going to make money was the packing game, especially because the packing game was in the discounted early bird unit, the bundle. You know, that was $135. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do a packing game. I want to do a multi-card. I was like, okay, I'll do a multi-card. And we discussed the games. We discussed royalty fees. We shook on it over the phone. I was like, okay, I was happy. You know, we got a packing game. If this thing funds, you know, we're going to get a decent amount of units sold, you know, and royalties. Anyways, put that in the back of your mind. After I hung up with Mike, probably like 30 minutes after, Lee calls me again. Hey, you know what? I was able to make the menu work. It's mapping now. You know, I just had to read through the documentation and then change 3 lines of code. Okay, well, good luck. We proceed to finish up the other menu, the one that we're doing for them. It was, you know, it was buggy and all that, but I delivered, you know, a day late, Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is Wednesday before the Kickstarter. Then Thursday comes in, and it's the day before Kickstarter. And I, daily operation as usual, and now I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this with a lot of people. A couple of organizations are going to start hating me, but this is just what happened. And I get a call from Mike saying, he was pissed. Oh my god, I just talked to John from Collector Vision, and they said that if they don't get the packing game, they're gonna be out of the project. Oh, like, I thought they were, they said that they weren't gonna finish the game, you know, the tiny night. I'm like, no, they want Sydney Hunter as a packing game. I'm like, well, I mean, we already shook on it. We already talked to people that I have licensed for their games, and they agreed, you know, to have it on a multi-card. What are you going to do? I mean, we already have that. We already shook on it, although we haven't had signed any contract.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I don't know what to do. I need to talk to him. He was busy or whatnot. But he said they're pulling away from the project if they don't get the packing game. I was like, well, fix that, and let me know, you know, let me know what you're going to do. And he said, Eli, would you be pulling away or leaving the project if I don't give you the packing game? I was like, I don't think I'll do that. I will be pissed, but, you know, expect some requirements for me to give it up. I don't know right now, you know, what are they going to be, but... once you do that, if you take away the packing it from us, I'm going to think about them and then come back to you. And he's like, okay, well, let me fix it. I'll talk to them anyways.
You know what's so crazy about all this, Eli? Is that here, like, the train wreck is occurring. The train has gone off the side of the bridge, is plummeting towards the bottom of the canyon. Meanwhile, the engineer is still tugging on the whistle. The fireman's still shoveling coal into the thing. This is insane.
Yeah, and I guess everybody started getting cold feet, or something just happened, or, you know, the heat that people were getting was, or, you know, parties were getting was getting, or the risk they were taking was getting higher and higher, and you know, the only thing to pay for that was the packing game, I guess. So, and honestly, and I'll get to this later, I think their move, that move they did, sort of like saved everybody else. And, you know, I'll get to that later, kind of a little bit. So, I finish up work, I go home, I take a drink of michelada, a beer, and then I was like, okay, well, they want to make demands, and they can say they believe I can do that too. I have more days. I was like, okay, Mike, send an email.
I'll get my own shower.
Yeah.
Okay, Mike. So, you know, after the and let me bring that email. I'm not going to read it directly, but I'm just going to get the information that I sent. I called Mike, and I wanted to tell this in, you know, on the phone, but he didn't answer. I called him like three times and wrote this email, and I said, okay, you know, you have this problem with the packing game with Collector Vision, and I only see two options for this. Either you don't give them the packing game and they leave, or you give you meet my requirements, and these are my list of requirements. So my first requirement was to show at least, if you don't meet these requirements and then you give the packing game, I will be out of the project, right? And the first requirement was to show at least two or more different platforms running on the system on the Kickstarter launch video. And then I really wanted them to change in cards, you know, showing that there's more than Super Nintendo in there. If not ready or cannot show that out launch video, push back the Kickstarter. That was my first demand or requirement. I asked Mike to step down from the front and go to the idea board or business relations of anything else, but just not up front. You know. I went a little bit not greedy, but, you know, I wanted to raise our royalty by 20% at least. Although, honestly, I could have been okay with 5% rate. Show the Toy Fair prototype, the inside, and that same prototype playing a game at the same time that showing the inside in a video. And then another will be making a voting board, in which will include my developers, you know, either us, ColecoVision, or any other major developer, the Coleco license owners, the hardware company, because I still thought this was a hardware company,
mm-hmm.
and then, very importantly, and I emphasize, a new third-party consultant to be hired. And then I told them to hire a community manager, you know, mainly because they're silent and they're not answering questions and stuff like that and deleting messages. That's just wrong and bad for business. And that was one of the men. And then mention these changes publicly. That was my request. And then I follow up sending the ROM of the sending him the ROM of the menu that we did. And all I got was a response saying that, let's talk tomorrow. A lot of changes have been done in the past few hours. And that was it. That's Thursday. And Friday, I get a call and from Mike and saying, you know what, we're going to delay the Kickstarter. I think we're going to do it ourselves. We want to keep the Kickstarter option open, but we want to probably push it to retailers. And you know, self-fund it, finish it up ourselves, and maybe sell direct. And I asked him, are you going to sell any games directly to people? We'll do it on our website, you know, take some pre-orders.
And that point was one that, excuse me, got raised as well, whether, you know, because there was one post that said, well, we're delaying the Kickstarter, and another one that said, you know, we've got outside investment. So they were still talking about maybe kickstarting it at this point.
Yeah, I mean, they said that they want to keep that option open. You know, either they would do it later. I mean, and in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, you'll self-fund it, and then you do Kickstarter. Kickstarter is a really good marketing platform, in my opinion, where a lot of times you make a product or a campaign, you'll get a lot of people that you wouldn't really get if you do it by yourself on that place, because there's a ton of people that just like to back Kickstarters. So,
yeah.
You know, I would understand if they, even if they self-fund it or somebody else self-funds a project, still goes to Kickstarter just to use it as a marketing tool. So this is just me. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what other people think. So, you know, that's what it was. I was like, okay. I was like, well, okay. And what about a packing game? Are you going to still, you know, need our packing game? I was like, no, Eli, we need our killer app. We need our game that sells consoles. I was like, oh, okay. Well, all right. Well, let me know how it goes. Keep me posted. You know, bye. And this is the day of the Kickstarter, right? They posted that Facebook statement about delaying it.
Yeah.
They knew they were going to delay it. And then I noticed that, you know, they said, oh, we delayed the Kickstarter. And then after the second paragraph or after half of that statement, they stopped using Kickstarter and then they started using the word pre-sale. So I guess they were slowly saying that they were going to go directly to retail or take pre-orders.
Well, yeah, that whole bit, we covered that in our live news where they announced, you know, I had the text. I you know, I might have the text handy. Let me see if I have it.
Well, Eli, real quick, was there any indication from Mike when you were at the dinner with him or anything else that there was any sort of relationships that were forged with these other publishers or big box retailers with a purchase order intent, or is that something you can't talk about?
I do remember mentioning, but this was at the Toy Fair, mentioning I totally forgot to mention something. But anyway, I remember mentioning, oh, Capcom is coming today, that day, but, you know, like I was there in two periods on the Toy Fair, some periods about an hour, and then I went back to the Toy Fair and all that. So I don't know if they talked to them. One thing that I just recall,
they were awfully busy in that hour then. So real quick, Eli, I found the text I was looking for. There was a tweet sent by one of the Retro Magazine people. It says, plan has changed actually. Got the call that we won't need to go the crowdsourcing route. Next thing you know, It's, I know it says more info will be posted on the Retro VGS Facebook page. Not too long after that, it was 30 minutes, an hour or so, the post came up, we're delaying the Kickstarter to make it even better. So that, I mean, there are two, from the same entity, two stories. One, we're not going crowdfunding. The next thing, our Kickstarter is delayed. And they're still doing Kickstarter. You know, it's just crazy.
Yeah, no, I guess that it's constant throughout their projects in the Retro VGS, people saying different things, you know, not being in the same channel, I guess. And this, I talked about with Lee and told him, you know what, Mike really needs to hire somebody that and address all of the rumors or everything, mainly on their website, then post it on social media, and then have somebody else post it or address it on forums. Because they're going all the different, like, well, Facebook says something, Twitter says something, website says something else, and forums is another thing. So, I told them, if you don't want people to think that Mike's lying, you know, you gotta make the main statement on your website or on your official something, you know, on your house if you want outside, but officially, and then every other outlet or social media you mention, you know, you go back to your official statement. Then everything's constant, and you know what, you know, you say the truth every time, you stick to your statement. You don't, you know, then people are not gonna be saying, well, you said this on Facebook and this is exactly what just happened. You know, one thing on Twitter and the other thing on Facebook, and it looks like they're lying. I don't know if they're, well, we know that there was some lying, but, you know, that was one of the issues that I talked about with Lee, you know, whenever he was trying to become my friend, with lawyers and showers. anyways, but I mean, yeah, that's, in my opinion, that's not professional. It confirms that Mike didn't really have a tight grip on their team, you know, why somebody else is posting something that's not constant what with the sort of main statement. So, anyways, you know, that's my opinion on that. I know, and this Mike didn't tell me, and I know Lee mentioned something about a retailer. And, well, you remember that I mentioned that he said a large check ready to drop. And I think it was like a retailer is interested on this thing. So I don't really know. I mean, I have my suspects of which, you know, retailer was, but I'd rather not mention. I want to give it, you know, there was some third party money involved. That's what I would say, you know. And another thing that I wanted to mention, that I forgot, the Monday of the Kickstarter, Monday of the Toy Fair, Mike calls me, he's excited, he's saying, oh, Atari came in, they are offering us their 300 game catalog for us to license and use as we want. And the first thing that came to my mind was like, oh God, run away. Because I've dealt with, you know, and I could say this story here or for another podcast, I've dealt with Atari before, and they're the opposite of a decent company, you know, the complete opposite, you know. I've had a very bad experience, and I have heard other experience of people dealing with Atari, the current Atari, right?
Mm-hmm.
The current executives, and, you know, that just was horrible. And I told Mike, be very careful, you know, if they're not good guys, you know, they're behind, they're trying to get your money, be careful. So, and then the week before the Kickstarter, I think, I heard rumors that Atari had bought out the project, and I was like, oh, I'm out. I think it was by the Kickstarter, you know, around that same day. I was like, oh, I'm not going to work with Atari. I'm not going to go near that. You know, I'm done. I'm not going to touch it. And I called Mike, and I called Chris. Hey, can you tell me if this is true? They're like, no, it's not true. Chris told me, and Mike was like, no, they want us to license stuff, but they want it upfront, like licensing fee. It was like, yeah, I knew that. I mean, most developers ask for an advance fee. And I told them it's probably going to be more than $20,000 to $50,000 or more. And he was like, yeah, yeah. He was just like that. So,
it sounds like at this point, like, you're a lot, you know, it sounds like you're almost an integral part of this team for getting this thing launched and stuff.
Well, I mean, I was always kept in the dark for a lot of, you know, most of the things. I didn't know Atari. You know, I gave him my suggestions and my advice of, you know, what I thought it would, of what I would do in the position. I mean, at the end of the day, if Mike really likes to drop names like you know.
Oh, yeah.
Easy, right? So he was dropping our name. He was dropping our games like crazy. You know, people, and then I really want this thing to be successful. One thing, because, you know, the project sounded cool, and we will sell units of games. And two, because our name is going to be dragged through the mud if something bad happens, and our games are going to be, you know, in controversies or whatever. So I really want to, you know, give the opinion of, like, my best advice to these people to try to steer them to the right direction, or what I believe the right direction would be. But, you know, they never really paid attention to me. They just ignored me. They were like, oh, yeah, 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 but they ignore me every time. And, you know, when they told me, I asked them, like, is Atari going to be here? Or they're going to be buying out this project? And we're like, no, no. Chris told me no. Mike was like, no. I was like, okay, well, at least that one, what that bullet just does. But this was before the whole collector vision pulling out and my requirements and all that. And honestly, I did these requirements to be proactive. I thought that they would benefit the project.
Yeah.
More than benefit. I mean, it would benefit me, but it was like a big picture requirement. You know, you're going to fix a lot of things if you do this. But, you know, they decided to delay the Kickstarter. They decided to, I guess, self-fund it. And they came up with that DVR thing inside the show. So.
Now, have you seen any increased traffic or?
Honestly, no. I mean,
decreased traffic?
Nah. It had brought zero increased traffic. I mean, I noticed since day one, every time they would mention us, they never tagged us on Facebook or on Twitter, and they never mentioned, like, whenever they didn't ask the people that were doing articles to give us a backlink on the article, so we never really got any benefit, any traffic, any sales. I mean, February and March and, you know, probably April are very slow months on e-commerce, so I'm aware, you know, we haven't had a lot of sales, so I want to believe that's why. Hopefully it's not because of all this crap that just happened with this console. But no traffic, nothing positive other than heat and a lot of questions and a lot of explanations to do. Because at the end of the day, you know, I don't think it's fair for the people or the scene or the target audience to be kept in the dark and being just sort of like they being taken advantage or being lied to. That's why since day one I start to be open and try to spoke and address whatever thing that was thrown at us, you know.
And really, that's all you can do. That's your best option. You're probably the only option open to you, really. You know, as a viable business. This is purely speculation now on your part. But I mean, how do you see the future of the project? Do you see it?
No,
Coleco going away? Do you see them picking up another name? Do you see yourself ever being involved with the team again?
I told this to Coleco. I will work with you because I've met them and they really haven't been other than a third party that licensed again a name. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're stepping up and trying to get this thing, you know,
verified
thing or just go away. So I will work with Coleco. I mean, they have pretty cool ideas for the mini arcades and certain. They have the plug and play, the flashback, and that's something that we re- really want to get into the flashback scene, at least the industry, you know. But now, I will not touch the BGS project at all.
And that's you as a business, in the business of selling games. And let's say it did come back and sell systems. You know, you are doing yourself out of revenue by saying that. But it sounds like it just isn't worth the hassle.
No, it's not. Like I said, you know, the heat that everybody was getting might have been worth it because, you know, we still thought, okay, they have a prototype, they're going to show it, people are going to, you know, be quiet now, and they're going to be happy, and we're going to get sales, you know, game selling cartridges, what we do, what we like. But then it turned into this monster of a project, and it's not worth it, man. And I can honestly say I've told people, you know, I told Coleco, let it die, man. Just let it die.
Yeah.
Sorry for banging on my desk.
There you go. No, I can tell emotions are running high and you're banging your desk.
So have you had any more conversations with Lee, or is Lee did he just sort of disappear at some point?
I got an email the day, okay, so the day that they, you know, they posted the pictures. I was told, hey, they're going to post pictures, you know, during the day. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, pictures. Yay. And I saw them, and I was like I said, I'm not an engineer. I'm not an engineer. And honestly, I was very delayed at everything. I've backtracked a lot on the orders that I have to fulfill thanks to all this debacle. And, you know, that day I was like, oh, picture, cool. Click next. And I do want to mention that I thought, you know, they're very specifically placed, the console. If you don't see any cables, that's odd.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't think of anything. And then people were, you know, that was day one. I think that night people were saying, like, oh, you know, it's not real. The DVR board hasn't been discovered then. It's not real. You know, it looks, you know, there's no cable. What is that? So next day, I got a call from Lee, and he starts laughing that, oh, you know what, in that picture, that white thing, that white cable thing was just a fan that we had in the office. And he had told me about, so we took these pictures in this room that's called, we call all our rooms in the campus after movies, and this one's called Golden Eye. So,
probably Brown Eye.
Yeah, I mean, who says this stuff?
Compulsive liars.
You should be like a stand-up comedian or something. Like, I don't know. Take away the Oscar from DiCaprio and give it to
me.
So,
you've been pretty active in the Atari Age forums.
Yeah.
Going on there, I guess, maybe just sort of clear the air and you know, your involvement in it. What do you think the, you know, generally it looks like most people on there are, you know, kind of being kind of nasty to Mike. And, I mean, I think you can maybe just say from meeting him, didn't seem like some sort of evil person.
No.
You know, maybe misinformed or something else. But it doesn't seem like there was too many people on the forum even defending him. Do you want to talk about what it's like over there right now?
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of people are angry because all that, I mean, it's an insult to your intelligence when somebody wants to take advantage of you, you know, you feel like, what, do you think I'm stupid or what, I mean, so I guess I feel like Mike is not a bad person, you know, met him and his wife, they seem like a great couple and a great, you know, human beings, okay, you know, whatever, they're not gonna eat your firstborn or anything like that, but I think he has to be responsible for what happened since day one, because even if he was taking advantage or lied to in some cases, or I don't know, he was responsible, he was a frontman, he was giving information and trusting, you know, he didn't really do his due diligence or research to see, okay, who's this Lee guy, what's this company, and you know, how this, that, or let me play the, how can you say, we have 100% FGPA prototype with, like, Lico and I don't know how many other cores, How can you say that if you had never actually touched it or played it? You know, and Mike confirmed that to me. I asked him, like, and this is after the DVR, did you actually touch the controller, plug in a car, played it, pulled another car and played the other game?
Yeah.
Like, I just trusted Leo. Like, oh my God. Like, that, Mike, just go get your money back. I told him, you know. I suggest the community could be a little bit vicious when something like this happens. It's just the internet. I mean, you're sort of like playing with a big, you know, thing that you can't really control, you know, when you are out there in the internet doing business. So, you got to be very smart on how to really make a mistake, how to really, before it derails to something bigger, fix it. And people would understand. I mean, if Mike would have come earlier and say, you know what, we're legal aid, we're not going to do it, or we're going to take an extra 6 months or something, we're not going to be at the toy fair, people will understand, because at the end of the day, we all are humans, and they will understand that, you know what, Mike is human, he might have, you know, this is not his full-time job, so they might be delayed, so that's okay, no toy fair. But Mike really wanted to push it, and you know, besides, it's just a case of making all the wrong decisions, you know, sort of like being against the universe, and the wrong decisions, one after another, and, you know, this is what happens.
Well, you know, you can call something a miscommunication, but eventually, if the same miscommunication is made, it becomes communication, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
I don't think he's a bad person or anything. I don't think he was out there to get anybody. I mean, I've read and seen all the other things that happen financially. So, you know, we all have friends that you shouldn't lend them not even $5, because you know that they're not gonna pay you back. We all have those friends. So.
So you're saying don't lend Maya Kennedy money?
Yeah, don't lend him $5. I wouldn't.
So you're saying he's the kind of guy like, hey, can I borrow $5? You probably wouldn't ever get it back.
Like, if you're willing to give it away, like, okay, I'll give you $5, then yeah. But if you're expecting $5 back, you never know.
Did he pay for dinner when he invited you out?
I just want to make sure that everybody knows I'm joking right now. Some people take stuff literally. So I'm just joking.
Is it true that Mike Kennedy borrowed money from you when you were out at dinner?
No. Actually, something funny happened there. Everybody ate, and my food never came in. So everybody was leaving when they realized that, oh, we didn't give you food. Oh, let me get you something from the kitchen. I got my food all late, eating by myself in the corner.
See, you even got stiffed at dinner.
Yeah. That was my luck.
Yeah. So is there any more of the story that you want to put out there, or have you kind of covered everything that you wanted to talk about?
I talked to Lee that after the day of people saying that it wasn't really the pictures looked odd. He was, you know, staying in the GoldenEye room, and there was a fan there, the cable one guy saying, you know, the cable that you could see, the white cable, it was a fan. And then he said, oh, and the bottom of that little drawer, whatever he put the console on, it was like a DVD and an Xbox 360 or Xbox One, the Star Wars edition that they had on the GoldenEye room. And he was just making fun of people for speculating and thinking all these weird things from the pictures, and without them, you know, knowing that they were simple things. Now, I really think that those pictures were, you know, staged to make it look bad. Like,
oh, I, to me that just smacks of a manic, you know, a very quickly done thing.
Yeah.
But gosh, you know, when you put out a picture like that, and there's no gray area here. I mean, the board has clearly been identified as a security camera video capture card. Do you really think that you put a picture out like that in front of that many technicians, engineers, you know, PC builders, enthusiasts, that's not going to get discovered? That's
okay, Scott. It doesn't matter because when you delete it off your Facebook, it's gone forever.
I really think that, again, Mike didn't do his due diligence. He didn't research. He just trusted this guy. Although, you know, it's a little bit odd that there had been 5 armor guys already. But, you know, supposedly Mike never saw the prototype, never touched it, never nothing other than the toy fur, and that he never saw the insides. So he trusted this Lee guy. And then he got these pictures from Lee. He just posted them. He trusted. That's my story. It could be true. You know, Mike was, you know, the way Mike is, it could be the truth. But, man, I mean, what kind of balls the other guy has. I mean, it's funny now.
What makes it even funnier for us is we've never heard of this campus with lawyers and showers and golden eye rooms. This is, just makes it all the more funnier.
Yeah, it's funny. It's just like a Family Guy episode or something like that, you know, where
did Mike ever confirm that he had been to this campus with showers? And
No, well, wait, this is the twist, the mind-blowing twist. Well,
get it out, we've been waiting 2 hours for it.
So, okay, now you got to donate $100 to Sequin Tractors. No, I'm just kidding. We gotta, so, you know, Lee tells me all this stuff, and he even tells me that some other guy in the company had made a little app where it would parse, I think, all the Atari Age thread, read through it, like a little bot, and then, you know, they will input some words that were important to them, and you know, posts will come up, you know, only the worth reading ones. And he was mentioning all this bullshit, right? So, okay, well, anyways, whatever, you know, the picture out there, I don't even know why was the purpose of that, call, and then we hung up. Then that night, you know, I was busy. Also, like I said, I was very busy trying to get. I was working extra hours and everything. I get a message from Paul Williams saying, "Does he look familiar?" And a link. And I was like, you know, I'm too busy. I didn't read anything. So my, you know, I was working at home. Then like I had to finish up a lot of stuff. And, you know, my wife went to sleep, I was working, and then I was like, what that message would have been? Well, I'll save it for after my shower and my dinner. So I ate food and showered, and I was like, okay, I snuggle up in bed to read, you know, all the Atari Age, you know, posts and all that. And then I see the whole freaking DVR thing. And I was like, I mean, I can't express what I thought, man. I was like, holy God, this is 1-to-1. This is exactly, this guy took, you know, those cards you find in Goodwill Computer Works, like 20 of them. Like, he probably went to Goodwill Computer Works for UK Mike. No, I don't know if you're in the States or in UK, but we have this thrift store here in the US called Goodwill, which, you know, they sell a bunch of used stuff, but there are some places that are called computer work, like Goodwill Computer Works, and they have like boxes and boxes and boxes of computer parts, mm-hmm. and they always have this box full of video cards and you know, external TV cards, and the PCI ones.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just imagine, you know, a Lee guy running to Goodwill, you know, and then buying the first PCI card that he found that looked like, you know, oh, let's get a blue PCB because those are the ones everybody's using, you know, not green.
Yeah.
And then put it in there, put like an LED card. You had to put it.
Hey, you want to hear something crazy, man?
What?
Because there's so many people, and I mentioned this on Atari Age. The way I described it was the network of people connected to this project. If you drew an org chart, is enormous, enormous. And since many, if not most of them, have been burned or you know, dropped or you know, screwed over in some way,
yeah.
a lot of them are reaching out to each other and talking. There's a huge, huge back channel communication going on about all this, right? And the amazing thing is this. You start to hear a lot of stories as it makes its, you know, the information makes its way through the network.
Yeah.
I have heard that the story being shopped around by somebody is that that card is real and actually is being used in the prototype to perform functions and, you know, it basically is an integral functional part.
I heard that too, you know, and I laughed. I mean, how do you even... Like, I'm not a hardware guy, but what does it have to do a computer part with a...
It quite literally takes an NTSC video, you know, does some signal conditioning, and takes, you know, frames of the video, you know, stores them, you know, as a video. It converts it, you know, into digital video. And that serves absolutely no function of any kind in any console ever made. It's so ridiculous that... It's almost exciting. It's like having a floppy drive with a sound card on it. It's just, it's the most absurd story. But I think that, you know, they were actually trying to shop that story. And you know, there's a couple of folks that have tried to plant stories with us. And, you know, they'll call you up and they'll repeat something like three or four times. Now, I don't know if it's a leak test or if it's trying to plant a story or both. But... My God, some of that stuff is just ridiculous. I mean, I enjoy hearing it. It's funny, but you know that anybody would buy that stuff.
I don't know. I don't even like who. What kind of person would do that, man? Like, what kind of what was Lee or whoever made that? Which I think it's Lee was thinking in his head. While he was putting together that chameleon, like,
wow. You know what? I gotta tell you. So I built the replica of the first toy fair prototype.
Can I do the second one?
So if any of our listeners out there, because I did not get a clear jag shell when those were made, if any of our listeners can send me a clear jag shell, and I will find some way to make it up to you, I will send you a prize. We can send you a copy of CG Adventures. Buy you a beer, you know, whatever you need. Please send me a clear jag shell so that I can put together a replica of this new one and have the whole set. I just feel like my collection isn't complete at this point.
Dude, and what I thought it was very funny is that, you know how people complain about the SNES mini prototype didn't have a power line?
They
had to add a freaking power SD to the second one just to let's shut up people, you know.
Taped to the wires. That's the great thing. If you notice, it's actually, I think the tape got warm or loosened up a bit, or they moved it because it looks like the light's position shifted a little bit between two photos.
Pointing like in an angle. It's not pointing from, like straight.
No, it's just completely random. But, yeah, listeners, I would love a clear jag shell.
You could point a laser pointer at an LED light, and it looks like it's lighting up.
Yeah. Well, guys, I think that's a wonderful, wonderful point to close out the story. You know, we got to get this thing to air. Like, you know, UK Mike just, you know, said, all right, we got to put this thing up there now. So, man.
I have to finish out the story.
Oh, please do, please do. So finish your story, and then we'll wrap it. But, man, this is just great.
Well, you know, just to finish up, a day after I talked to Lee and the whole DVR thing happened, I called Mike early, you know, like I really needed to talk to Mike, you know, and I call him at like 9 a.m. Central, and he answers, and he's like, he's done. And the only thing I said is, what the heck, Mike? And he's like, I don't know, Eli. I'm lost for words. I don't know what happened. I told him it's exactly the same as 101. I know. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. And I told him, you know, when I went in and said, you know, did you actually touch it? Did you play with it? I'm like, no, I always trusted this guy. So I tell him, In that morning, I got an email from Lee saying that, you know, the company was going to come forward with a statement to take off Pete off Mike and, you know, be responsible. And he mentions to be responsible for what we've done. And that, you know, like, so you're saying you've done something bad or what? Like, you know, he sort of, like, confirmed he had done something.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm talking to Mike, like, all right, Mike, well, you know, try to fix this stuff. You know, I don't think we're going to be working on this anymore. And I ask him, so can you tell me who's this company? Like, which company is it? And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, Lee told me that this is a large company with campuses and showers and lawyers and GoldenEye. And he's like, no, that's bullshit, Mike tells me. Lee's just a contractor. He has a couple other people working for him, but that's it. I was like, holy crap. You know, everything that had happened in the last 2 weeks in my life was a lie. You know, everything he said, it was a lie, you know. And I don't know why Mike never, you know, knew that he was telling, I mean, maybe he knew that he was telling me all this crap, or he didn't, but I understand how can you let something like that happen, especially to a third-party company. And, you know, I got pretty pissed. Like I said, if I ever see the guy, somebody hold me back, I'm probably going to punch him or, you know, kick him in the face or something. But, you know.
Do you believe Mike is done with Lee?
I don't know if he's done. I told him, just get your money back and, you know, and you're done. And I told him, you know, if before that, he told me that Lee was not a company. I told him, you know, if they don't come forward, this company, you know, this project is dead. You got, if you want ever to get something like this done, or at least be credible online, you know, because you already have a pretty, you know, bad reputation, this company is supposed to be large, and let him come forward. And no, they want to remain anonymous. And I was like, well, who are they? What company is it? Like, I really wanted to look them up. Their campus sounded cool. You know, you could shower.
Yeah, I want to go and visit.
Yeah. So, and no, you know what? Just a quick parenthesis. He compared his campus to Google. You know, like, our campus is just like Google.
Wow.
Anyway.
Wow.
And he's like, well, I got to fix this thing. I was like, okay, well, give me a call. You know, I agree that night we talked to
talk. Oh, yeah, the Retroland campus.
The Retroland campus.
He's called Retroland, yeah.
It's fading away now. You got to believe to make it, you know, stay here. Anyway.
Laugh if you believe in Retroland.
Yeah.
There you go.
If you click your heels together, you end up there.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
And that's when I confirmed to you guys, hey, let's do this thing, I'm done, you know, and I get an email from Mike saying that I should respect the NDA, and I exploded on the guy, poor guy, he probably, you know, I don't know what he did, I told him, you know, what NDA, like, there's nothing to NDA to, you know, there's no product, what am I going to be protecting or not disclosing, a fake product?
Yeah, you're not allowed to tell us about what doesn't exist.
Yeah, so, you know, I ended up here, and it's 2 hours and 24 minutes now. So, that's it.
On that note, boys, let's hit the showers.
Yeah. Go grab a lawyer.
Interview, man. UK Mike, get this thing up on the server. We'll let you, it should be up within, like, what, a half hour or so?
No, it'll take me a bit longer than that. I've got a couple of things to do, but within the next hour or so, yeah.
All right, man.
Just before we cut you loose, it's only fair that we can let you mention your website and social media and all that stuff where people can find you and go and buy games.
Yeah, you guys can go to peakcoreinteractive.com and then go to the store section if you want to buy old school games. And just want to make sure everybody knows that we're not going to be ever working in a project like this, or we're not going to be developing for the Chameleon.
Don't ever be another project like this, man.
And your stuff's on Steam, too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you can buy some of our games on Steam, you know, and maybe, I don't know, I'll make my own console, too.
All right.
I'll call it the Pico Puma or something like that.
It's as good a name as any.
Yeah.
All right, Eli, thank you for your time, and thank you for sharing what's become an even funnier story than it was before.
And again, to bookend, let's hit the shower.
Well, this is Keith Robinson, and I've just sat here wasting a lot of computer memory here talking to Retro Gaming Roundup. So I thank them for their time, and I hope you appreciate all the work they've put into it.
I'm Jerry Alford.
This is Keith Robinson.
This is Chad Gabney.
This is Bob Smith.
This is Bob Plaro.
Hi, this is Jay Smith.
This is Wes Johnson.
This is Matthew Mercer.
This is Keith Ritchie.
I am the great and powerful Oz.
This is Professor Warhol.
I'm Ed Freeze.
Hello, guys. This is Diane Sauer.
Yeah, it's Howard Phillips.
They call me Keithan.
I'm Steve Wojda.
Yo, this is Tommy Tallarico.
This is David Crane.
This is
Edwards.
Hi, this is Greg Pavin.
I'm Janelle J. Clay.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Heineman.
There's three guys on this podcast.
They're legally obligated to let you know they're sexual offenders.
Retro Gaming Roundup. These three guys are fucking idiots.